Yeah, that's coming through fine. Okay, this is continuing with Donald Folland on 19 June 1983.
Good.
Okay.
Now, that is true, that this was telling what we were planning to do. And during that following summer, we made measurements from out in the desert.
Right.
And I also came here to Utah.
Right.
And tried to do some verification in Utah. And as I remember, we were able to verify that this signal was coming as Jansky had described it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's, like I say, I'll get to that just shortly. Let's just finish your seminar here. Let's see if I have any other questions. And you basically concluded that this radiation was all out of proportion to being any kind of black body radiation of any reasonable temperature.
Yeah.
Which is an important conclusion. I mean, that was worthy of publication at that time if you had pursued it just from a theoretical point of view, because that had not been realized. No one had worked it out in that kind of a sense before. Jansky didn't talk about the intensity really at all.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so you gave that seminar, and then the idea was to actually try to get some data. And something that Langer has told me about, I talked to him recently, is that Potapenko was a member of a club called the 100 to 1 Shots Club. Do you remember this at all?
I don't remember.
This was a group of Caltech faculty, and they basically got together once a week to consider wild ideas and speculative things. And
I think I did have a contact with that group, and they invited me to go with them once down to Palomar.
Well, okay. Now, this is what I want to ask about, or at least it may be. Langer remembers this group going up to Mount Palomar and Potapenko trying out his experiment with the mast antenna and so forth. And you had not mentioned this before, nor had I.
No, we did not have the equipment at Palomar.
Well, that's what he remembers.
Yeah, no, we didn't have the equipment there.
I see. Now, what did you do at Palomar?
We went there. This was at the, with John Anderson, who you may remember was instrumental in the 200-inch telescope.
Right.
And we went down there, and this group was going down primarily to look at the telescope.
Uh-huh.
And have an explanation by Anderson and some of the astronomers there as to how the telescope was going to be used.
I see. So Langer may be mixing up two different events then.
Well, he may be mixing two different events because we never did have our equipment down at Palomar.
Well, the other thing is that I was speculating is that maybe Potapenko gave it a try. He was not successful. Langer's memory was that they tried it out and Potapenko just sort of shook his head and said, well, I've got to do more. I was wondering whether maybe he tried this out before he even really was in contact with you, and then he, you know, brought the subject up a few months later with you.
Boy, if he did, I don't remember him ever mentioning it.
Never told you about it, okay.
That's right. It seemed to me that this was, when I got involved with it, was when he first said, this is something we would like to do, and this is what we would like to try and verify.
Right, and he made no mention of any previous things he'd done.
No previous work being done other than Jansky's.
Right,
and
well...
he said that this came, and he gave me the references, of course, from Jansky, and it would be very important to verify this.
Right, right.
And that's when we started on it.
Well, that makes more sense to me, frankly, although I wish the other were true, because it makes a better story to have have a radio experiment being done up on Mount Palomar.
Yes.
So now, given that you two decide to do this, did you build a special receiver, specially sensitive for this?
Yes, we built a special superheterodyne receiver, which of course is not sensitive compared to what you have today, but it was a very sensitive, I guess one of the most sensitive receivers available at the time.
Mm-hmm. Any idea what the noise figure might have been?
Oh, I couldn't tell you. And then we worked on antennas, two or three designs of antennas, to try and give us the directional response.
What kind of things did you think of besides the ones that were finally used, actually?
Well, we had a big triangular wire type, and then Potapenko came up with an idea for a sort of a big loop antenna.
Is that the one that was used, the double loop thing?
This loop is the one that, I think in one of these reports, you may have noticed that the antenna was blown down by the wind in the Mojave Desert. It was this big loop antenna.
Oh, I see. That was not the mast.
No.
Okay, well, I have a picture of the loop antenna. Actually, you may not have a copy of that.
I don't have a copy.
That came from Potapenko's, it was a snapshot that he had, and I made a copy of it.
Uh-huh.
Let me see. I want to try to do this in order here so I don't miss anything. So you consider these various kinds of antennas, and the only ones that were actually built and used were this double loop thing and the maypole arrangement. Is that right?
That's right.
And the interesting thing about the double loop one is that it had an equatorial mount, which was a bit of a refinement. In Potapenko's papers, he was able to find a couple drawings of it, and sure enough, it's tilted at the angle appropriate for the latitude of Los Angeles, and so that was quite a refinement for that day.
Yes, now that was one that we took out in the Mojave Desert.
You did take that out? Okay, well, the only picture...
And we did, for one evening, we got what I would say were positive results.
Mm-hmm.
That we were able to measure the signal, and we were able to measure it as it moved across the sky during the night.
Mm-hmm.
And then a heavy wind came up, and it blew the thing over, and then we went to this other type antenna. This turned out to be a rather cumbersome thing, the way it had been built, to operate and use.
Well, it had this big pier that was with it, too.
Yes, it was mounted on sort of a pylon.
Right, and you had to haul that around, I guess.
You had to haul that around.
Right. Now, the picture I have is on the roof of a building, which I presume is at Caltech. Would that be the roof of the physics building or something like that, do you think?
Probably was the roof of the Norman Bridge Lab.
Yeah. And that's interesting. So that was used out in the desert. Now, well, since we're talking about that, what really was the idea of the double loop? Why not just have a double dipole or something like that?
I don't think I can tell you.
Unless he was worried about polarization. Of course, it's circularly polarized, and therefore if the radiation were linearly polarized, you wouldn't have to worry about the alignment of your antenna relative to it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But you don't remember any considerations like that?
But I don't remember, no.
And what was the way in which you used it? Did you sort of move it around?
It was on a shaft that was lined with the North Star.
Right.
And then it could be turned then to follow across the sky.
Right, but did you sort of move it 10 or 20 degrees, take a reading, then move it on and... That kind of thing?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay. And
then we would move the antenna around and take the reading, and then about an hour later do it again and so on during the night.
And your memory is that you were actually able to see that it was moving from east to west, the peak
the
of the...
signal was moving from east to west.
Of the radiation, right.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Okay, now this is a good time to ask about this Caltech article, which you have, I guess, by Levitt. In there, you have not yet actually detected the signal, and that's April 30th, so it must have been after that.
Yes, it was in the summer.
Okay.
Primarily in the late spring and summer of 36.
Oh, and that's an odd detail while I think of it. Do you know what model car that was that you were using? I've got a picture of the mast antenna with the car in front of it. And
I think that was a little 1920... Was it 1924? Name 24 sticks in my mind, Chevrolet.
24 Chevrolet.
Yeah. It was a car I bought for $65.
Oh, it was your car, I see.
Yes. Just an interesting aside that reminds me of. Potapenko said, now, you're going out in the desert, and you want to be sure you take enough oil and everything. He said, how much oil do you get on your car?
What is
your mileage? I said, I'll get a couple of thousand miles. A quart of oil. Oh, he says, that's wonderful. I only get 100 miles on mine.
Good heavens.
I don't know what kind of a leak he had.
Right.
He had an old Nash.
He thought that was more like normal, huh?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, what it says in here first is that you tried it out on the roof of Westbridge, but there you had so much static from automobile distributors, particularly those of 36 model Fords, that you moved away.
That interested me because I didn't remember that. Ever saying that, but it says so in the report,
right.
So maybe we did.
But now that would be the loop antenna. Was the mast antenna, was that only used in the desert?
That was only used, well, that was used, you mean the wire?
Yeah.
That was used here in Utah.
Also in Utah, right.
Also in the desert.
And in the Mojave Desert.
Big Bear Lake. We took that one up to Big Bear Lake.
Right. Okay, well, let's stick. Okay, so you got the loop antenna. That was your first antenna.
That's right.
And you tried it on the roof of Westbridge. Now, what does that refer to? That's just the physics.
That's physics building. Yeah.
Okay. And then it said you went to the Institute's farm in Arcadia. And what is that referring to?
I don't remember that. I can't tell you.
Well, Potapenko did refer to a vegetable garden or something that you guys tried it in. I presume that's the same place.
That must be the same place. And I don't know why, but I have a complete blank of that.
Is Arcadia just a town next to Pasadena?
It's right next to Pasadena, just east of Pasadena.
Okay. Apparently it was some agricultural thing.
Yeah.
And then you still had static problems, and then another experiment was tried in Antelope Valley. Where is that? Do you remember that?
Yeah, that's out in the desert.
Oh, that's in the desert, okay.
That's out in the desert. But did you have it mentioned of Bear Lake, Big Bear?
No. All I know is what's in this article here.
Okay, well, we went up to Big Bear and tried it with the wire antenna, and that is up just beyond Lake Arrowhead. In the mountains east of...
Is that where the solar observatory is now? I've never been there, but there's a Big Bear solar observatory.
I think it is, but I'm not positive.
Okay. So you went to how many different locations then in the desert? Just those two?
Just those two, mm-hmm. The Big Bear Lake, and then some of the mountain areas here in Utah, east of Salt Lake.
Okay. Well, before we get to that, though... in the Mojave Desert now, it says that a severe wind destroyed the antenna, as you were saying.
That's the loop antenna.
But you said you did get some reasonable results beforehand, but then this article seems to be implying that that you haven't really gotten anything yet.
Well, as I remember, we did have something. It was not what we would consider to be a really firm piece of data, but it was an indication.
Yeah. Well, maybe you were just playing it a bit conservative in terms of what you told him at that time.
Yeah.
So then, when this antenna blew over, you went to this other kind of antenna, which was a bit sturdier, and that was only used in the Mojave Desert. Now, how many times did you go out for these kind of expeditions at night or whenever?
Oh, we had... this one expedition with the loop, then we had another expedition in the desert with, this would be the Antelope Island, with the wire antenna.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to Big Bear, and I can't remember just how many nights we stayed there, but I went up there and we did camp.
I see.
So we were there for two or three nights. And then it came summer vacation time, and I came back to Utah with the equipment. And we went into the mountains here east of Salt Lake and had about three nights operation.
Potapenko was with you?
No, I was alone. Had some assistance from here.
Mm-hmm. And now what was the nature of the results the same as you were telling me before, that basically you could see that the maximum was moving across the sky during the night, and you could only really pick out that there was one maximum, this kind of thing, or?
Yes. And that, as far as I remember it, that's about all what we were able to get.
And this was just relative measurements, of course. You weren't doing any kind of absolute...
That's correct.
Let's see. So the Utah results would be the last ones that were done.
Those were the last.
And then when you came back to Caltech, I guess, was when the whole oil prospecting business came up.
That's right. I went back to... go on for my doctor's degree, and when I got back there, Potapenko said, I'd like to have you work on this other project. We've been given money, but you won't be able to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
I decided to go with the project.
So you would have been willing to continue with this if the support had been there.
If it hadn't come up, I think we definitely would have continued it.
That's interesting.
Because, as I say, the results were coming out in a positive manner, and we would be much interested in refining them and making some absolute measurements.
Right. Now, do you know anything about Potapenko's attempt to get a larger antenna? There's a drawing done by Russell Porter, the person that worked on the 200-inch also, which I have, of a large rhombic that was on a rotatable platform, sort of like Jansky's thing. But this is now twice as big as Jansky's antenna. And they had worked this up, and Potapenko tells the story that he tried to get $1,000 out of Millikan but Milliken said no dice.
Yeah, so I was going to say that that was never built because we could never get money for it.
Right. But do you have any information that you could give me on that?
I don't have any information on that antenna.
Presumably, if he had been able to get that funding, then he might not have gone off on this oil thing.
Yeah, it's quite possible.
Hmm.
Of course, that was at a time, as you know, during the Depression, and money was pretty hard to come by.
Right, right. Now, $1,000 was quite a bit.
Yes.
Okay. A couple other odd questions here. Did you ever take this thing down to the beach, anywhere near the water?
No.
Okay. There was a misunderstanding in part of Potapenko's interview where I thought maybe he mentioned that.
As far as I know, it was never taken to the water, and as far as I know, it never went anywhere after this receiver was built without me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And the in terms of what you were thinking of, I mentioned this when we talked a few hours ago, you chose the same frequency as Jansky's receiver, namely 14.6 meters wavelength. Were you thinking that this might well be narrowband radiation of some kind?
Well, I think really we didn't know, and we said the best place to start is at a place that's already been identified.
Right.
Makes, to verify it.
Makes sense.
And so the first part of our program was just to verify what Jansky had done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really about as far as we went.
Right, right. Because in the Salt Lake Tribune article that you sent me of June 21st, it says in here anyway, that further study of the shortwave frequencies may disclose other frequencies on which these signals may be heard from other parts of the heavens, thus enabling scientists to tune in and study different stars.
That's correct, but we didn't ever get to that.
Right, but it almost sounds like the idea was that maybe different parts of the sky emitted
different frequencies. That's what we thought might be true.
Hmm. That's a rather different concept, certainly from the present one, but it's very interesting that you were thinking that way.
Yes.
And Langer's theory was a emission from charged dust, and it was a spectral kind of transition, you know, a monochromatic kind of thing.
Yes.
So that may have been influencing how you were thinking also. Let's see what else I wanted to ask about here. Do you have any old photographs of this era, of Potapenko, or of any of this equipment?
I don't think I do. I have a photograph of Potapenko here.
That would be very nice to have, of that era, from the 30s?
Yeah, let me see what it is. This is where December 1937 was the date on this, and it was it's a newspaper picture out of the newspaper. In fact, I've got two here.
Oh, it's a newspaper picture.
It's a newspaper, so it isn't really
yeah.
very good.
Well, I do have a newspaper picture of him. I was looking for a proper photograph.
The only thing I have in the way of a photograph, and I think I still have it, is a photograph where he's with a group of students, where we were having a picnic from school one day, and they took a group photograph.
Does it show him well? And you also?
We're both in there. I'd have to look it up. I don't have it before me now. I'd have to look it up and see how good it really is.
Well, if it is decent, I'd be very interested in getting a copy of it. I'd be willing to make one myself if you'd be willing to.
Well, I can make the copy. That's what I'm doing now is photographic work.
Oh, I see. Really?
And I do a great deal of copy work.
I see. Well, if it does show you both well, I'd be very interested in having a copy.
Well, let me look it up. It'll
okay.
take a little while to look it up, and if it's good, I'll send you a copy.
Great. And please put the date and identify everyone that you can on it.
Okay. Now, give me, for that, let me get your name again and address.
Right. Right. The name is W.T. Sullivan, and it's Department of Astronomy. And the mail stop is FM20, Frank Mary 20.
FM20.
Right, University of Washington, Seattle, Washington, 98195.
98. Didn't get that, 98.
195.
195. Good. Well, let me look that up and see what it is. It'd be an old photograph, of course. And how big a photograph would you need?
Oh, just a 5x7 or something like that would be fine.
Because this, as I remember it, this original is 8x10.
Yeah. Or 8x10, either way, whatever's easiest. And I suppose that you haven't come across any newspaper articles or other stuff from that era other than what you sent me several years ago.
I don't believe so.
You basically sent me the seminar talk and the about 6 or 7 newspaper articles.
These pictures of Potapenko I was mentioning are in the paper. One was on a molecular discovery, which aids doctors is the heading. Another one on the quintuplet radio tube.
Huh.
And I could make a copy.
Well, those would be interesting, yeah. They would give me some more idea of the kind of things he was working on.
Yeah, why don't I
do
that, and I'll make a copy of both the picture and the article for
you. That would be interesting.
Uh-huh.
There's no lab notebook that would have been kept on this, is there, of any kind?
The lab notebook would be on file at Caltech.
Really?
Yeah, I think if there's one, and there should be, it should be on file there.
You mean such things, there was a departmental file for such lab notebooks?
Well, the lab notebooks were issued by the university, by the college, and were property of the college.
Well, that's interesting. I didn't realize that.
Uh-huh.
So it's more like an industrial lab.
Yeah. And I'm trying to remember, I can't remember whether I'm thinking of the lab notebook I kept there, one that I kept after I went to Sperry.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's sort of unusual for a university to be that organized.
Yeah.
In terms of lab notebooks.
Well, I'm not clear on it. It may have been that Potapenko himself just had us keep a notebook on it.
Yeah, he found a couple scraps with a few odd bits of the experiment, but nothing really useful.
Well, they're probably the only ones that were available then.
Yeah. Well, the only ones that survived in any case.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that just about covers, unless there were some other aspects that you think I should know.
Very good.
And like I said, I will send you the draft of the portion of the chapter that covers this, and I'll be very interested in your comments. That should be coming along in the next 2 or 3 weeks or so.
Very good, and I'll get these pictures out to you in just 2 or 3 days.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Fallon.
Very good.
Right, bye-bye.
Glad to talk to you. Bye.
That ends the interview with Donald Fallon on 19 June 1983, talking from my home in Seattle to his in Salt Lake City.